The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners Cole Hammack and Cameron Utley. And today we're getting into the topic of trusts. We do a lot of kind of trust estate planning for clients, and I think this is sort of a hot topic. A lot of people don't really understand, people like me that are not CFPs don't really understand, and especially for those who have built a pretty good sized portfolio and retirement plan for themselves, trusts might be something that you know, they need to understand more about. So if you're interested in kind of learning more about how to ensure that your legacy lasts for generations, this is something that you kind of need to peel back the layers. So I have some questions for you, as usual, that I want to get into, some notes that I've taken. And first, you know, we talk about wills. We talk, you know, estate planning in general consists of wills, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Let's go through the list of other things. Just kind of give people a little bit of a foundation. A good estate plan.
The first piece is a will. That's the foundation. It basically is who's. I mean, if you don't have a trust in place, it's very simply where's all the stuff that doesn't have anything designated. Where who's that going to go to? Who's going to take care of the kids? And then any official wishes or declarations that you want to make in after you pass. Mm-hmm. The other two that are common. Sometimes it's just referred to as a power of attorney, but there's technically two. There's a power of attorney for finances and a mm-hmm. power of attorney for healthcare. Mm-hmm. Essentially what that means is you are going to elect someone if you can't make your own decisions, whether that's, permanent incapacity or temporary incapacity. Someone can step in and make sure that bills are paid on time, make sure that if you need life-saving medicine, that can be given to you if you can't give your own consent. Mm-hmm. And the last one is the living will, which is just unfortunately referred to maybe in our lay terms as the pull the plug document, just gives more or less gives doctors the easier path to know if that time comes, whether you use life support or not, that they have the clear instructions from you versus having to go either through the family to make that decision or through worse, maybe some attorneys to figure that out.
Okay. We know there are definitely nightmare situations in the past where that's not clearly stated, and that can be such a headache, such a heartache for everybody involved, because we're talking persistent vegetative state on life support, 5, 10 plus years, to be able to make that abundantly clear, this is what I want in that worst case scenario is so very important.
Is a do not resuscitate part of that, or is that a separate document?
Separate document. Okay. Yeah, great question. So that one's very strictly, hey, if something happens to me, and then say it's even just a heart attack, you're explicitly stating, I don't want to be brought back. This one's more of a, if I'm in that, like I said, a persistent vegetative state on life support, do we pull the plug or do we not? Mm-hmm. So the DNR is, I think, a little bit more aggressive, mm-hmm. if you will, in that sense, but
and
they're
probably
related.
Specialized, right? Probably
it
specialized given your situation,
yeah,
your health.
It definitely can be.
Okay. And then the juke, I like to call it, is the trust, right?
Yeah.
So it can be very, very helpful and very, very hindering if you're not super careful and fully understand what it means. So
yes.
Let's give the definition, talk to people about what it is, and if there's more than one type, and maybe a circumstance where people would incorporate those.
Yeah, so just to be clear, there's more than one type.
Yeah.
There's so many.
There's more than two types?
Yeah, it gets into an alphabet soup of trusts. Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
So I don't know that we'll necessarily get into all of those today, but I think for most people...
Just the two.
Okay.
Let's talk about the two.
Yeah. Thank you. I was going to say, for most people, we're dealing with two, maybe a third. But the main two you may see would be a testamentary trust. So that's essentially a trust that's incorporated within a last will and testament. So the benefit of that is it keeps things relatively simple at the estate level. We're not dealing with a separate document, a separate name, some things that might come along with that. But it outlines who does what for the purpose of leaving things generally behind for kids or family members if we want to have restrictions tied to that.
Okay.
Then there's the revocable trust.
Sorry to interrupt. Let's go back. Give me an example. So Uncle Ed, who's got a massive wealth and four estates and horses and all kinds of good stuff, that would probably be something he would have, right?
So Uncle Ed, depending on what he's trying to accomplish, he might more so have number two. So number one really is fairly simple. The biggest issue, I think, in my mind of anyone having a testamentary trust is when the estate goes through the will, anything going through the will goes through probate. The issue with probate is it's timely, it's costly, it's public, and it's a pain. It's really a pain to deal with, especially depending on the size of the estate. So for Uncle Ed, in this,
yeah. I don't know why. Yeah, let's just go with that.
Uncle Ed would be dealing with a massive probate issue, especially depending on the state in which he's living in. I could create a probate issue. So the alternative would be a revocable trust.
Okay.
So a revocable trust is a standalone trust. And the benefit of that is you can name that document directly, say as beneficiary or owners of accounts. And what that does is help remove things from probate because it explicitly says it goes to this document, to this tool outside of the will. And that can save thousands, even millions of dollars, depending on the scale that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some expensive horses.
They are, period, the end.
All right, so we've got irrevocable.
Irrevocable would be the third one.
Okay.
But I was thinking just the first two, the testamentary and the revocable, and then getting into irrevocable adds a complete larger layer of difficulty, complexity.
I know we said two, but we'll stop at three, I promise.
Yes, that's exactly. Because the third, it is important, but it's definitely not for everybody.
Which one cannot be changed?
Irrevocable.
Irrevocable.
Yep.
Okay. So that would come into play if somebody wanted to have a specific person or estate aligned a certain way and they don't want anybody touching it, nobody contests it, it is what it is.
Yeah. I think broadly speaking that the purpose of it is we want to remove X amount of dollars or resources from our estate. Because essentially what an irrevocable trust is it is a separate entity from you. So where the revocable trust is largely considered an extension of you, irrevocable is separate. It has its own social security number. Like it's its own entity, its own being. So obviously that'll create complexity there. But by being able to shift things over to that own being, then it's carved out of your estate, which, again, we're giving up control generally to do that. But sometimes, again, it may be worth giving up control if we can save so much money and estate taxes, ultimately mm-hmm. what it comes down to.
And logically, every trust becomes irrevocable at some point, meaning, you know, an irrevocable trust while you're still living just means what you're putting in that is set in stone, I think what you just referenced mm-hmm. earlier. But even a revocable trust or a testamentary trust becomes irrevocable or you can't change it once you've passed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the irrevocable just also creates a situation where it's better for the family, where it is what it is, nobody's fighting, there it is. So for those who have amassed a decent amount of wealth, that might be a smart way to go about aligning things.
It depends on decent amount of wealth and how we define better. Really, the irrevocable trust is very much an it depends, and it's such a case-by-case basis on whether or not it's relevant. Because, again, you're adding so much complexity to things that may not be appropriate if you can accomplish what you're wanting to do with the revocable trust and keep things relatively simple for mm-hmm. the family.
So I've heard that trusts are kind of like legal cheat codes for...
I like that phrase.
Tax efficiency. So how can people use trusts, especially those who have amassed a decent sized portfolio, to minimize estate taxes and make the most of tax exemptions? We're not tax attorneys or CPAs, but
good disclosure.
Yeah, we deal with this every day. So you know, what do you do when you've got a client coming in that's considering this?
Yeah. Yeah. You want to take this, Cameron, or you want me to get it?
You can start. I'll piggyback.
Excellent. So a lot of it's on the basis of where is the current estate tax exemption and what is the client's overall net worth and actual concern, where's that coming from? So if we're worried about estate taxes, we have to take into consideration what's the threshold by which we have to start paying estate tax or start to worry about that. So right now, that number is somewhere around $13 million per person. So if we have a two-person household, we need a net worth over $26 million before we need to worry about estate taxes whatsoever. So that's the first thing. So some people, we maybe just be thinking, well, this is what we've heard, or we've seen it on TV, or we've seen a whatever article for it, and we're worried about it for the sake of worrying about it. It in most instances, it's probably not relevant. But that is where those irrevocable trusts would come in. So if we are over that $26 million threshold, and the idea that anything over, when we pass, we're paying 40% of that to the government, it's significant. So having that irrevocable trust to say, well, let's carve out some of that. We have a specific idea of what we'd want to do with this, so we're comfortable that we know we can't change it once we move it to that irrevocable trust. Then we're able to carve that out from the estate, save that 40%, and that is an excellent planning strategy. But that's really the qualifier right now. But we'll see a lot of people that may have had irrevocable trusts in the past because that exemption hasn't always been this high. So it's only been relatively this high since about 2017. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I think it was something like $6 million per person. So the threshold to clear for a household was $12 million. Mm-hmm. And then before that is considerably lower. There's a period of time where it's just $1 million. So we saw a lot of irrevocable trusts from the early 2000s that over the years just made less and less sense. Mm-hmm. So it's something that you actively have to pay attention to and continue to pay attention to it just because the landscape changes fairly often.
What's the trigger to do that? Is it more about the investments or more about just a sort of a checkup with the attorney?
The trigger to do, clarify a little bit for me.
To change it or to reassess it.
Yeah, I'd say always check up with the attorney because they're the ones that are going to be keyed in from a state level, which may look different than the federal level. Mm-hmm. So I referenced federal estate taxes, but every state may have their own estate tax or inheritance tax mm-hmm. that they may impose as well. So keeping that in consideration within the state level too, very important. Do that through the attorney.
I was just going to say, I think when you're getting to the point of truly worrying about estate taxes, I know we've probably said it a time or two here on the podcast where when you have a business, the business almost gets its own financial plan. Mm-hmm. I think when you start to get to the idea of worrying about estate taxes, you know, you're in that higher net worth category, the estate plan, working with the attorney, it does start to become its own financial plan as well, because you have a plan for what's right in front of you, what you're, you know, trying to live off your estate currently, but then you've got a plan for how do we extend this estate that has been built to last not just one, but hopefully many generations.
It's a great lead into the next one. I want to talk about business owners and real estate investors, sort of trust for the entrepreneur mindset. You know, Uncle Sam can make things awfully messy, the paperwork, as far as paperwork. Yeah. And if you want to keep things in the family, it sounds like a trust is the way to kind of protect your business.
Yeah, so trust can be pretty unique, too, in the sense that we've seen instances where we'll pick a business owner, they have an LLC, and we just think, oh, this is this, that, the end. But you can generally add a transfer on death to LLCs, to business types. So that way, if something happens to you, then whatever may be associated with that business can then flow through to the trust. So it is a way that you can help keep things exactly to your point in the family, avoid probate, because that would be an easy one just to overlook, mm-hmm. assuming, hey, it dies with me, that's the end of it. But there may be some things tied to that better to flow through the family and not deal with that probate piece.
I think that does, in my mind, at least when you phrase the question, falls under the assumption that family is going to be continuing the business. We could probably do a whole nother episode on just business succession planning. Mm-hmm. If you have non-family partners, if it's just you, if you don't expect your kids or family members to take the business over, that falls into a whole different category than what maybe you were looking at.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. How do people use real estate trusts because we talk a lot about real estate trusts, and this is something that I kind of looked into, to transfer properties and avoid capital gains taxes to preserve their equity. Is that even something that we would address, or is that something that is a more of a CPA question maybe, or an attorney question?
I would go attorney question. So there are some types like a qualified personal residence trust, a QPERT. Again, that's getting into the alphabet soup of it and where there's so many complexities and things that you have to do specifically to avoid major estate tax issues with that. So I don't know that we should carve out time for that one specifically on this show. Mm-hmm. But fair question.
All right. So building a future-proof legacy trust for generations to come. Your trust should naturally grow with your life, right? Ebb and flow. If you're not wearing the same shoes for 20 years, you know, makes sense. You're going to not keep an outdated trust. I think we kind of covered that. Is there anything else you would offer people to keep on their radar?
I'd say one thing is, this just comes with reviewing the entire estate plan. Who do you have elected to be in charge of managing the assets? Who do you have in charge of, or who do you have elected to receive the assets, assuming you're still living? Same as who do you want to have as your power of attorney? You know, often a lot of clients we work with who are maybe in their young family stage of life get an estate plan in place, but by the time maybe they're looking at it for a second time, kids are 10, 15, maybe even 20 years older, and probably weren't trusting a six-year-old to manage and be the trustee of the estate, but maybe we would trust a 26-year-old mm-hmm. to do it, or a 36-year-old. And so that's always something important. Or maybe who we had, maybe we had mom and dad as a power of attorney or a trustee. Maybe mom and dad aren't around anymore. Maybe they aren't fit to do it for whatever reason. I think that's one thing that comes to mind that we review most often.
Great points, Cameron. I think of one other, just bringing up the legacy aspect of it. We didn't really get into this as far as the types of trusts out there, and maybe better suited for another show just because there's a lot of depth to it, but even maybe a special needs trust. So the idea that we may have a child where maybe there's some developmental concerns, and we want to make sure that we're protecting any assets or any income that they may be eligible for at some point in the future. So this would be a way that we could do that without negatively impacting any federal or state benefits that they may be able to receive. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of complexity in that, and there are a lot of limitations in terms of numbers and amounts for it, but can really make a world of difference from that legacy perspective without throwing things off.
What are some of the common mistakes people make when they put a trust together in their financial plan?
I think that the biggest one, hands down, has to be to not fund the trust, which I see your face. Doesn't make sense when you first hear it.
Yeah, see, now you're talking. Nobody else can see my face, but yeah.
As a very specific phrasing, you fund the trust.
Did I look like I just glazed over?
What do you say?
It was a flat line. That's what we call a flat line, Cole.
So when you get a trust, it's one thing to get that document in place, right? And usually what happens is at the same time that the trust is executed, the attorney is going to update the will to incorporate the trust, to say, oh, something happens to me, everything goes through the will and then goes through the trust. But remember, anything that goes through the will goes through probate. We want to avoid that. So if we're getting a revocable trust in place, oftentimes the next step is to either update ownership or beneficiaries for your various accounts to incorporate that trust. Now, depending on the order, that's entirely comes down to the recommendation by the attorney. So I'm not going to sit here and say do one first, the other, whatever. Get that directly from the attorney. But most people either don't think to ask that question, or the attorney doesn't do the proper follow-up. That we'll see people all the time where they come to us with trust, but there's nowhere in their ownership or nowhere in their beneficiaries where that's listed. And that's still going to create a huge probate headache.
Let me understand this.
Yep.
So you're saying that it's not enough to have beneficiaries assigned to your specific accounts or TODs to your accounts. You have to have a beneficiary set up within the trust. The trustee is not the beneficiary.
Maybe it depends on whether or not the trustee is the beneficiary. But the idea is we'll pick the house, for example. It's mm-hmm. In a lot of cases, someone's largest asset. In most cases for a household, that home may be owned jointly, and that's it. So if something happens to you, then what happens to the home? What's going to go through the will? And then maybe it goes to the kids or family member, whomever. But But again, if it goes to the will, it's passing through probate. So what the attorney may say when you get the trust in place is, we want to have this home owned by the trust or have a transfer on death to the trust. So that way, if something happens to you, rather than passing through the will, dealing with that probate headache, which can take months or years depending on your capacity to deal with it, it's going directly to the trust and then providing for your beneficiaries.
Interesting. So, and this may not be the same thing, so stop me if it's not, because this is my brain here. Mm-hmm. When offspring put assets, if a parent decides to put their assets in their offspring's name while they're still alive, that's outside of a trust.
Correct. Yeah, that's essentially transferring
ownership. Does it make better sense to have a trust to do that?
It depends.
Your favorite. What are we trying to accomplish? But the issue at that part of the estate level is what's called a step up in basis. So if we transfer ownership, we're transferring basis. So basically the point at which, or the dollar amount that we bought, we'll pick the house. If we bought the house for $200,000 15 years ago and now it's worth $500,000, we transfer that to the kids. They have a basis of $200,000, meaning if they sell it after you pass, they're paying taxes on the difference between current market value, so call it still $500,000, and $200,000. They're paying a lot in taxes versus maybe that trust route. So you maintain it ownership in your name. When you pass, you get a step up in basis, meaning they're going to inherit that at the market value. So $500,000 and $500,000, if they sell it same day, they may not pay a dime in taxes. So we just saved them like $60,000-odd just by doing that approach to it, not to mention the probate costs.
I think the important thing to take away from it is that by default, if you elect a person or you don't elect anyone on the house, an IRA, whatever, it's going to go through the will, it's going to go through probate, costly, and you have the least, relatively the least control, least decision making. The trust, whereas the will is a very state specific document, you don't get a lot of customization with it. The trust, to your point of an alphabet soup, and there's all kinds of trusts out there, is a blank canvas. You get a lot more customization, a lot more decision making, a lot more potentially restriction. You know, if you don't want your, again, if you pass and you have a 16-year-old, well, in your state, they may say, well, they can't touch the IRA until they're X age. Once they're X age, they have full unencumbered access to that IRA. Whereas if you were saying, well, that's a lot of money for an 18-year-old, you could maybe push until they have to be older or have to meet other requirements to have access to those funds.
Mm-hmm. Great point. Wow.
Yeah.
I think we need to do another show on these other types of trusts. I had no idea. I thought there were two.
Yeah. If only.
Okay.
If only.
Well, it sounds to me like a solid trust plan isn't just about the wealth. It's really about, and you definitely don't want to put it off if you're considering it, right?
Yeah.
See the attorney.
I'd say it's less about the wealth. It's more about the why. So and what are we trying to accomplish? Yeah. Do we need control beyond the grave? I know that's Tyler's big thing for it. Do you want a control aspect of it? And when you have kids, I think regardless of net worth, it's something worth considering.
Yeah. And we talk a lot about peace of mind in our business. That sounds like it's in tandem with that. Probably a good idea to seek some counsel from the specialist. Well, thank you very much, guys. This has been an interesting conversation. We're definitely going to have to pick up the ball and take it to another level on this one. That's it for today. We appreciate you tuning in. And don't forget to share with your friends. We'll catch you on the next topic.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.